So we're in John chapter 15. I'm going to start in verse 9. I'm going to read down to verse 17. And then we'll look at some other scripture also as we go forward. John chapter 15, your Bibles. I'll begin reading in verse number 9. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Now, verse 13 really will be our big springboard, if you will, of the whole study. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if you do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. Now, one of the great truths about Calvary is the willingness of Jesus to give his life for us. It isn't simply that Jesus was crucified. It wasn't a scene where the soldiers were holding them down on the cross, and as they were holding him down and putting nails in his hands and his feet against his will. That's not what happened. In fact, the Bible teaches us he willingly gave his life. He allowed himself to be crucified. Now, I told you to look at, and I'll have you look at it again, verse 13 of chapter 15. Greater loveth no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Now, obviously, that these disciples, I don't think these disciples knew exactly what Jesus was saying. I don't think they were connecting him laying down his life on Calvary when he said this. But Jesus knew. He knew exactly what he was going to do. And he's telling them, I'm laying down my life. I'm giving my life. Not simply I'm going to be killed. I'm going to allow it to happen. I'm going to not fight against it. Now go back with me to chapter 10 of John and look with me in verse number 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is a hireling and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd and know my sheep and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. Now watch. And I lay down my life for the sheep. Another sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. And I watch verse 18. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. So this willingness to lay down one's life that we see in Christ also is supposed to be seen in us who follow Christ. Go with me to 1 John 3:16. Now he talks about it in John 15, he talks about it in John 10. You can make that conclusion because he says, as I've loved you, you're supposed to love one another. Well, how have I loved you? I've laid down my life. So how do you love one another? You lay down your life. Greater love hath no man than this, that he lay down his life. So we can make the application, I think, pretty easily from the text we've already seen. But look with me at 1 John, I guess just to really zero in, make it a more of a finer point, 1 John 3, verse 16. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Now, I think this is in next week's or next lesson's introduction, I think, because it seems to be ringing in my head. But I don't think it's in this lesson, but I'm going to say it anyway, so I'll let a little bit the cat out of the bag. A lot of the things that we're saying are basically biblical teaching. But they're even more so if you're going to be a leader. there's always a greater demand for the leader to do what he's supposed to do. We can't simply say, well, you know, that's how we're all supposed to live. That is how we're all supposed to live. But if anyone's going to live that way, should it not be the leader? Should not be the one who's trying to lead in the ways of the Lord? So if you look at a family situation, and sometimes we use family illustration, sometimes church, sometimes secular job, trying to show you that leadership is in different areas of our life. But if we use a family illustration, if the kids aren't going to live for Jesus, should not at least the parents do? You can't simply say, well, no one in my family wants to live for Jesus. I'm not even going to. No, you're the leader. You're supposed to be setting the pattern. You're supposed to be setting the pace. And so these things that we see about laying down our life, that is true about every believer, but how much more true is it if we're going to lead biblically in the areas the Lord has given us to lead? Now, this principle of sacrifice isn't simply about dying, but a willingness to sacrifice one's life. Now, I'm going to use it in the application, not that we're sacrificing our life like we're running into a burning building and we're going to die and perish trying to save someone else. I don't mean it that way. What I mean is die to self. Sacrifice yourself. Die to self in order to do what the Lord has you to do. Laying down your life that way. That is going to be the main thrust of the application. And that's what we're talking about. Sacrificing your life. Not just dying, but sacrificing your life to do what the Lord has called us to do. Now, I want you to understand this within this context we're talking about. I think we need to understand, and I read this some time ago, and it really spoke to me, and I've used it in multiple sermons since then. I can't remember, it was years ago that I read this. And it went something like this. This won't be exactly what I read, but this is what I learned from it. Jesus laid down his life. Now watch this. He laid down his life before he went to Calvary. His whole ministry was about laying down his life. The fact that he left heaven and came here was in that way kind of laying down his life. He put upon himself the form of a servant. He laid down that way, his life that way. So from that, this is the statement that I got from that book or whatever that where I got it. It was a great statement. I'm going to give it to you again. The cross life preceded the cross death. A lot of people thought, oh, I would die for Jesus. Okay, how about living for him? Because let me tell you, if you're not going to live for him, you probably really wouldn't die for him either. Everyone's like, yeah, when they bring out the guillotines, I'll be first in line. I'll give my life. But you won't even show up faith. No, not you, because you're here. But I'm talking about these people. They won't read the Bible. They won't pray. They won't show up for church. But they'll be first in line to get their head chopped off. No, they won't be. They're going to be doing all the things they're doing right now, which is not the right things. So the cross life is what precedes the cross death. And this sacrifice we're talking about is the cross life, laying down our life now to do the will of God. So the one who wants to lead biblically must adopt this principle of sacrifice in their leadership. So I'm going to give you now some basic areas or practical ways about sacrificing our life. Again, we're not talking about dying, that type of sacrifice. We're talking about willingly laying down our life on behalf of those that we say we love and those we're supposed to be leading. So what kind of sacrifice are we talking about? Let's go back to John 15. Let me give you the first one. Look with me again. Now we're going to pick it up in verse 18. So we read down to verse 17. Now we're going to continue in verse 18. Read down to about verse 25. If the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. Let me just stop. And I want you to consider what this meant for Jesus when he said this. Did anyone love us like Jesus loved us? You ever wonder, how did Jesus feel when he was hated? No man has ever loved like Jesus loved us. And here he's saying, literally, you hated me. I loved you. I've loved you for eternity. And they hated me. Could you imagine the brokenness that Jesus must have felt when he was saying these words? If the world hate you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love his own. But because you're not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they'll keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake. Because they not, and again, I think he's saying this with sadness. Because they know not him that sent me. He's not flipping about this. This is, I think, these are some broken words he's saying. If I had not come and spoken to them, they had not had sin. But now they have no cloak for their sin. They can't hide anymore. He that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other man did, they had not had sin. But now have they both seen and hated both me and my Father. But this cometh to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. So how does this apply to this principle of sacrifice and leadership? Here's the first idea, the first application. You must be willing to sacrifice acceptance to do what is right. He's sacrificing their acceptance. He's sacrificing their positive feelings towards him because he's simply doing what is right to do. So these are not flippant statements. I think they really reveal what it meant for Jesus to lay down his life. He came and he was hated. He was rejected simply because he was doing the will of the Lord, the will of the Father. Now, understand this. A leader does not have to be hated, nor should he want to be hated, but he must be willing to be hated to do what is right. That's a hard statement, but it's a true statement. We have to be willing to say, this is what's right to do, and as a leader, I'm going to do what's right, even though those I love may hate me for it. But this is the right thing to do. I'm going to sacrifice their acceptance. I'm going to sacrifice their love, as it were. They're going along with me. They're accepting me. They're supporting me. I'm going to sacrifice that because this is the right thing to do. And if you're going to be a leader, you're going to have to, at times, sacrifice that because you're going to have to do what is right. Put it one more way. A leader must be willing to lay down his life to any applause or accolade, any type of positive award or recognition. That's what we mean by that. He must be willing to lay down his life to any applause or accolade in order to do what is right for those he leads. Now notice there's a switch in a thought there. I don't know if you caught that. I said earlier, the first part of that point, you're going to have to sacrifice their acceptance to do what is right. Now watch this, and you're going to have to sacrifice their acceptance to do what they actually need you to do. Let me ask you, did the world need Jesus to die for him? They did. Were they accepting him when he came? They were not. He sacrificed their acceptance because he knew what they needed. That's what we're talking about here. Willing to sacrifice to do what is right, what they need us to do. Now, this is important, and I'm going to build on to in the next point. Let me just say this. When we neglect this part right here, when we want acceptance more than what they need, when we want acceptance more than what is right, we're going to compromise. Here's a classic situation. A parent, any parent, wants their kids to like them. Now, some kids don't understand that. Some kids think, no, my parents want me to hate them because all the things they do, they must want me to hate them. No parent wants to be hated. Every parent wants to be loved. But may I ask, what's more important, for your child to think you love them or for you to do right by your child? To do right by your child, in case you're wondering. That is the answer. In other words, watch this. It's more important to be the parent than be the pal. Can you do both? At times, yes. But if I have to make a choice, am I going to be the pal to my kids or the parent to my kids? What is right, what they need is to be the parent. And so they may not think I'm palsy-wowsy and we're getting along like, you know, good old buddies, but I need to do what's right by them because this is what they need for me to do. So this principle of sacrifice tells me I have to sacrifice acceptance by those I lead in order to do what is right by those I lead. Now let's add to that and give you the second thought. Go with me to John chapter 6. Because I think this helps us understand. This second one is kind of a corollary or builds upon it, helps us understand this thought here. John chapter 6, look with me in verse 24. Now, we're not going to read the whole context of what's happening. I'm hoping you know some of it. This is the feeding of the 5,000, and then later on when they show up, and basically they say, hey, let's do this again. This is pretty good. And Jesus has this discourse with them, and they basically like, well, if you're not going to keep feeding me, I'm going to leave. And that's what happens. So that's kind of the whole thing, but we'll just pick up a couple of the verses. John chapter 6, look with me at verse 24. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus. Doesn't that sound good? Seeking for Jesus. That's a great phrase. That's a great motto, seeking for Jesus. But why are you seeking for Jesus? That's the problem. And when they had found him on the other side of the sea, they said unto him, Rabbi, when camest thou hither? Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you. Jesus knows exactly how to cut to it. Because notice what he says. Ye seek me, not because you saw the miracles, but because you did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life. Notice he's making this distinction for them, which the Son of Man shall give unto you, for him hath God the Father sealed. Then they said they unto him, What shall we do that we might work the works of God? Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he has sent. Now there's a lot of things being taught here, but let's just go forward. Now look at verse 60. Many, therefore, of his disciples, when they had heard this is still in the same context, it's just longer in the narrative, so we're still, there's nothing has changed, the setting is still the same. Many, therefore, of his disciples, when they had heard this, said, This is a hard saying, who can hear it? When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, Doth this offend you? What and if you shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before? It is the Spirit that quickeneth, makes alive. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak in you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some of you that believe not. For Jesus knew from the beginning who they were that believed not and who should betray him. Verse 65, and he said, Therefore said I unto you that no man can come unto me except it were given unto him of my Father. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. They're like, yeah, we're out of here. No more free lunch. I'm not going to get what I want out of this. Well, I'm not really sure I'm into this relationship anymore because it's not really producing what I want it to produce. So not only do we have to sacrifice acceptance. Now watch this. And I'm telling you, it's kind of all the same point, but I'm saying it's slightly different so you see maybe the fullness of it. So number two is this. You must be willing to sacrifice what people want to give them what they need. And sometimes people don't want their want sacrifice. They want what they want. They're not really concerned what they need. They just know what they want. A leader, if you're going to lead biblically, it must see the big picture and act in accordance with it. If you're the father, you got to see the big picture. If you're the husband, you got to see the big picture. If you're the Sunday school teacher, you got to see the big picture. You know, if you're the boss, you got to see the big picture. Whatever people you're leading, you got to see the big picture. Followers don't always see that. All they see is this is what I want right now to happen. A leader must see the big picture and act in accordance with it. Followers may, if they so choose to, they may focus on the easy thing, the convenient thing, the satisfying thing. If you ever led people, you know, a lot of times they say, why can't we do this? This is so much easier because we need to do it this way. But this is easier, but this is the right way. But this is easier, but this is the right way. But this is easier. It's like you're not going to win the argument, so you got to do what's right. Followers may focus on the easy thing, the convenient thing, the satisfying thing. Leaders must focus on the important thing, the needful thing, the right thing. That is what is needed, not necessarily what always is wanted. Now, let me give it to you this way. I want you to think about this statement. When a leader gives a follower what he wants instead of what he needs. Now, if you can do both, isn't that great? If the need and the want goes together, be great. If both of them work together and you can do both, that is a wonderful outcome. But if there's a decision, here's what they want, here's what they need. Okay? What should I do? I should do what they need, because that's going to be beneficial. I'm the leader. I got to think about them, not just what they want, but what they need. So when a leader gives a follower what he wants instead of what he needs, now watch this. Not only is that follower not getting what he needs, but here's what you need. Now listen to the end of this statement. But other followers may not get what they need as well. You don't do what's right by them and you go ahead and give in to their wants, other followers are going to suffer because of that compromise you're making. Now, why would I say that? Let's go back to John 6. We stopped at verse 66. Let's go back to verse 66. From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him. So let's stop, because I look at you and you're kind of looking glassy-eyed. So I'm going to move around. I'm going to move my arms around like this. I'm going to jump a little bit to get your attention. Okay? That's about all I got into me tonight. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple questions. What did these people want who left? What were they mostly interested in based on what we're told in John 6? What were they, huh?
Vittles,
food, their belly, right? It's kind of like, you know, the God is their belly. Almost like exactly what happened. They wanted food. And Jesus said, you want the food that's going to perish. I'm offering you food that will bring eternal life. Talking about himself. Yeah, you bring eternal life, but I'm hungry right now. I'm very much like the Esau, you know. Yeah, what's good is that? I want chili right now. And so they want the food right now. And so they said, basically, well then, if you're not going to do it, we'll go find someone who does, or maybe we'll go down to McDonald's, but hey, we're out of here. And so they leave, correct? That's true to what the text tells us, right? But watch what happens next. Let's pick it up in verse 67. Then said Jesus unto the 12, will you also go away? So stop again. Did the multitudes leave or stay?
Left.
So who is he talking to? The 12, right? Have they left? No, because the multitudes left, the 12 stayed. Now, watch what happens. Then Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life. What he was offering the multitudes, which they did not care to take, that's what these disciples wanted. Verse 69, and we believe and are sure that thou art that Christ, the Son of the living God. So the 12 said, hey, this is what we want, because Jesus stands up. No more of this, okay, I know I fed you. I know 5,000 plus people got fed. I know you got your bellies full, but that's not why I'm here. I'm not here just to give you the Happy Meal. I'm here to give you eternal life. And they're like, yeah, we want the Happy Meal. And they leave. But the 12 stay because they want the eternal words that Jesus was offering. Now watch this. What if Jesus had given in to the multitudes? What would happen with the 12? They wouldn't have got what they needed, would they? You know, sometimes that's the hard choice of leadership. Because it's easy to do what people want instead of saying, but this is right, what's right to do. You know, to give in to one, whether it's one child over the other child, maybe this one child is going astray and you want to start compromising to, you know, I want to keep them happy, or whether it's, you know, the one guy at work who's a loudmouth and causing all the problems, so you go ahead and let him do things he shouldn't do just to keep, I just want to keep him happy. All that does is it causes sacrifice to the ones who want to do right. This is a classic bus ministry situation. You always had a few kids on the bus who are going to be the troublemakers. They're the loud ones. They get all the attention. And it's easy on a bus route to just try to do all the things to keep these ones who are misbehaving happy. But what about all the ones who are coming because they actually want to learn things? You're sacrificing them for the few misbehaved ones. Now, if the few misbehaved ones would kind of straighten up and do right, that'd be great. But don't sacrifice the ones who you can actually meet the needs to. And so Jesus understood this. I cannot sacrifice and give in to their wants. I have to sacrifice and not do that. I have to not give in to the wants because I have to give in to the needs. And if I don't do that, then those who really want it, who have the need and want the need, aren't going to get it either. So other followers may not get what they need as well. If Jesus had given the multitude their wants, he would have neglected the needs of the disciples. Let me give you just a... It's admittedly not the greatest illustration slash analogy. But again, I'm trying to put it in a practical way. Because sometimes I don't want to over-spiritualize it when we don't see how it practically works in our life. So let me give you a practical illustration. And as always, I always like to use, you know, Long John Silver's. Okay, so thank you. Long John Silver illustration. At the end of each... Thank you. Even the baby pirates are into it. Good. Who did that? Was that Carson? Good, Carson. So at the end of each shift, I won't bore you with all the details of how every shift had to, I won't go into intricacies, except to say that end of every shift, you had certain things that had to be done, so the next shift showed up, things are ready. But it's a funny thing, at the end of every shift, there were certain people, not I shouldn't say every shift, but there were certain people who I had as employees who always tried to slide by. You know, okay, I'm ready to punch out. And as long as you let them punch out, they would punch out and go home and nothing be ready. None of the coolers are stocked, none of the fish is stocked, none of the vats are filtered, nothing's ready. And so the next guy who walks in, he walks in and he has to do all of the prep for his shift, which is supposed to be done. Because every time you finish a shift, you prep for the next shift. So the next shift comes in, he can get busy, and then he preps for the next shift. It works out perfect when you do it. So if I don't make this cook's like, oh, you know, why do you got to make me stock the cooler? Why do you got to make me filter the vat? Why do you got to make me? Because if you don't, the next person gets taken advantage of. So if I give into your want, I'm sacrificing their need. And what they need is for the things to be ready when they show up. And so you can't sacrifice and give in and go along with their wanting things because it's going to hurt others who have a need over here. Followers, and now we're building on this thought here. Followers may want special or different treatment. But what they need, and followers could be your children, followers could be workers, followers could be people you're ministering to, Sunday school students, whatever the followers are in that particular situations. They may want special or different treatment. But what they need is to be treated fairly, equally, and consistently as other followers. That's what they really need. You know, we have a, let me just give you this statement, and I'll tell you what I was about to tell you. When we do this, as a leader, it reduces contention between followers and stress in leaders. So let's go back to the Long John Silvers before I give you the one I was going to give you and didn't give you. So let's go back to the Long John. I'll go back one illustration. If this cook does not stock everything ready for the next cook, when the next cook shows up, he's going to be a little not happy. And now he's going to be mad at that cook because that cook didn't prepare for him. And so he's like, well, when it's my shift and he's coming, then I'm not going to prepare for him either. I'll just show him what it's like. And now, because of my poor leadership, I've allowed contention to be in my followers. It wouldn't be there if I was doing my job right. And if I'm not doing my job right, it creates stress in me because now all of a sudden there's a line going out the door and there's no fish ready to be put down in the vats and the vats aren't ready to be worked. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. All because I wasn't willing to make certain sacrifices that I need to make. Now, let me give you another way of looking at it. We have a policy in our church that we try to stick by. I won't say we're perfect at it, but we try to. And that is this. We don't do for one member what we're not willing to do for every member. So when someone says, can we do X? Well, can I do that? Can I allow everyone to do that? So let's say you want to do, I think this might happen years ago. Let's say you want to do, say, Pastor White, I really want to have a big yard sale, rummage sale, garage sale, and I really need a big area to do it in. Can I use the church maybe during the week and I'll set everything up and I'll clean up afterwards? Can I have my garage sale, yard sale, rummage sale here? Can I really? I mean, I'm faithful. I'm here every service. You know that I love Jesus. Can I do that? No. You hate me. No, I don't hate you. But if I let you, I got to let every other member do it. And that would be problematic. Because then we would have things not ready for the service, people feeling like their things are being taken advantage of. And when yard sales are over and things are still sitting here and we're getting ready to have church, you know, that, you know, yeah, let's push this stuff off the podium so I can preach. And so it just wouldn't work. And you can't do for one what you can't, not willing to do for all. Because if I give in for one and don't give in for the others, then there's contention and stress that does not need to be there. So that's the second way of looking at this idea of sacrifice. So I'm laying down my life. I'm laying down my willingness to be under accepted. I'm laying down my what people might want so I can do what they need. And now let's look at a third way. Go with me to Matthew 26. Matthew 26. Now, we're kind of looking at the same principle. We looked at it over here. Now we kind of looked at it over here. Now we're kind of looking at it from another angle, one more way. Matthew 26. Look with me in verse 52. This is the idea of laying down my life as a leader. Now, I could apply in a whole bunch of other ways as we think about our Christian life in general, but I'm looking at it within the context of a leader, laying down our life, dying to self for the sake of my followers. Matthew 26, because every leader wants to be loved. They want to be accepted, but I got to sacrifice some things because this is what's best to do. Matthew 26, verse 52. This is in the Garden of Gethsemane there, and behold, sorry, and then said, I was at verse 51, verse 52. Then said Jesus unto him, put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou not that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be? In that same hour, said Jesus to the multitudes, are you come out as against a thief with swords and staves for to take me? I sat daily with you teaching in the temple, and you lay no hold on me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Now watch at the end of that verse. And all the disciples forsook him and fled. Now I'll drop down. Let's go to chapter 27. Verse 39. And they that passed by, now this is his actual crucifixion now. And they that passed by reviled him, wagging their heads and saying, thou that destroyest the temple and buildest it in 3 days, save thyself. If thou be the Son of God, come down from the cross. Likewise also the chief priests, mocking him with the scribes and elders, said, he saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be the King of Israel, let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe him. And they continue on. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now, if he will have him, for he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth. And then you can read the rest. So what does this tell us about sacrifice? Number three is this. You must be willing to sacrifice being understood in your actions. There's a lot of misunderstanding here. His disciples, earlier on in chapter 26, they thought, okay, it's time, okay, insurrection time, let's grab the sword, it's time to set up God's kingdom. And Jesus basically said, no, that's not what we're doing here. And the end result is they forsook him and fled. And then when he's hanging on a cross, they're basically throwing his words back in his face, but they're throwing, that's not what he meant. When he said, I'll destroy this temple and I'll build it again in 3 days, he's talking about his body, not the physical building. But yet they're throwing it back in his face, not either they didn't understand or they didn't care to understand. You know, he saved others, himself he cannot save. And all of these statements, they're ridiculing him, they're mocking him, they're throwing his words back in his face. He knew all this was going to happen. But that sacrifice life, that cross life that he endured was because he is willing to be misunderstood. He was sacrificing their understanding because he knew what was right to do. So think about it this way. No matter how many times Jesus tried, now talking to his disciples, not to the ones who didn't believe, but to his disciples. No matter how many times Jesus tried to teach the apostles about his sacrificial death, they really never seemed to understand. They never really seemed to grasp it, what he was trying to tell them. Now watch. Yet their inability to grasp the teaching didn't stop Jesus from doing what he was supposed to do. Just because they didn't understand, just because they said, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, you may not understand, but this is the right thing to do. Now, we do this as parents at times, and obviously we should probably be careful how many times we do it, but sometimes, this is what you say. The child says, but why? And you say, because I'm the dad, and I said so. Because sometimes they're not going to understand. They're not mature enough. They're not maybe willing to understand. But as the dad, or as the parent, or as whatever the leadership part you're in, you got to do what's right, even if they have no concept or not able or not willing to understand. It is still on you to do what's right. And you have to be willing to sacrifice being understood. In other words, being willing to be misunderstood. Because they'll think, oh, you just do it because you hate me. You're just doing it because you want all the attention. You're just doing it because you're hard-headed. You're just doing it because you're contrary. You're doing it because you're a control freak. None of those are the right reasons. But obviously I can't get you to understand the right reason. I've tried. You don't get it. But this is still the right thing to do. That's what leaders do. They sacrifice being understood because they're willing to do what's right even if others don't understand it. Now, with that said, give you just a couple caveats. We should be able to explain our decisions and actions. Okay, it's not that we don't have an explanation. It's not that Jesus never tried to explain it. Did he tell them he was going to the cross and die and raise again 3 days? Yes. Did they ever get it? No. Okay, I tried to explain it. You're just not getting it. And sometimes as a leader, you try to explain that. So you should be able to explain. You should have some reason for what you're doing. If your reason for everything is, I'm dead, that's why, and you never have a reason, well, that's not good. But I'm just saying sometimes, though, that's all they're going to understand because you've tried to explain and it's not sinking in. So we should be able to explain our decisions and actions. But we should understand that they may not understand, or sometimes their misunderstanding is just not agreeing. Well, I don't understand. Okay, translate, I don't like it, don't agree with it. You understand what I'm doing, you just don't like it. Okay, that's not the same thing. Okay, they may not understand or agree even after we explain. Now, this doesn't mean we shouldn't try to explain, but we are not going to be held hostage to their lack of understanding. And I'll give you two, one more way to look at it. When there isn't a clear principle, involved in the decision, then it'd be wise to strive for agreement. Okay, if there's not a clear, this is what's right to do, it's wise, let's talk it out. Let's have some maybe back and forth. Okay, we don't want to have unnecessary misunderstanding or contention. If we can sit and talk about it, maybe come to a group decision because there's not a definite principle, there's nothing wrong with that. But if there is a clear principle, then you should try to gain their agreement, if possible, but ultimately do what is right regardless. In other words, if A, B, and C are your choices, and they're all right choices, then you can talk about, okay, which one really do we all kind of like? If A is the only right choice, why talk about B or C? It's not the right choice. But what about B? It's not the right choice. What about C? Not the right choice. What about D, E, F, G, A? Nope. A is the right choice. I can explain you why about A. I can try to help you understand A. I can try to get you to agree with A. But at the end of the day, A is the right choice in what we're going to do. Go with me to John chapter 1. John chapter 1. Now, I'm using that phrase sacrifice because it is a sacrifice. You know, leaders are human. They like to be liked. They like to be appreciated. They like to be understood. They like to be accepted. But you have to sometimes sacrifice those things to do what is the right thing to do. John chapter 1, verse 10. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came into his own. So he did. He presented himself to his own. He came into his own, and his own received him not. It didn't change, though, what he was going to do. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. So he did come to them. He did present himself. But eventually, it was those who followed, who accepted that, are the ones who are going to be saved. All right, let me give you a couple quick I say quick, there's like six statements I'm going to give you here. What sacrifice must be made by a leader, in this context we're talking about, will differ from one leader to another. What one leader has to sacrifice may not be another. Well, everyone seems to like them. Well, that just may not be your case in life. Everyone may hate you. Sometimes it just seems that way. Not only that, but it also differ from one area of leadership to another. I have worked in three different Christian schools. In all three different Christian schools, I had a different rapport with the students. In the first one, I'll be honest, the very first one I had, it was. I don't know if any of they would agree with me, but I think they all loved me. It was a great time. The second one, I was only a teacher, I wasn't the principal, but my class seemed to like me. A lot of my jokes went over their head. The first year was third and fourth grade. But it was great because I just tell my jokes, I laughed at them, they're like, but it was fun. The second year I taught there, it was seventh and eighth grade. And, well, you did them out. They're seventh and eighth graders, you know. They're just, you know. What are you? I'm a seventh and eighth grader. Okay, yep. Can see it in your face. And then the last one was at a different school, and that was another whole situation. Not like the first two. Okay? But it doesn't change my responsibility I had. So it differs from one leader to another. It differs from one place of leadership to another place of leadership. Yet leading biblically, no matter what is, there's always going to be some type of sacrifice. No matter how it is, there's going to be some sacrifice. It's just leadership. It might look different, but there's going to be some type of sacrifice. Which means this. Regardless of who we are, what our situation, we must be willing to lay down our own lives for the sake of our followers. Now, this is what I want you to get. Because all this talk, we're talking about sacrifice. You know, you do what's right, whether they like it or not, and all that. Well, we're not doing it just because we're hard-nosed and can't get along with them. We're doing it for their sake. Why did Jesus say, I am not going to keep feeding you? Because that's not what they needed. That might be what they wanted, but they didn't want what they needed. For the sake of the followers, I got to do what's right. And so we're not talking about just being a hard-nosed and can't get along with people. We're talking about doing what's right for the followers, and that requires a sacrifice. And sometimes we sacrifice their affection, but it's still the right thing to do. Now, again, does not exempt leaders from trying to explain or seek an agreement. I keep saying that because I don't want you to think then we're having a, you know, we're just all of a sudden we're, I'm in charge! Okay, I'm never promoting that type of attitude. Okay, but here's my last statement. But doing what is right eventually must trump a follower's acceptance, agreement, or approval. If they can accept, agree, and approve, great. But eventually, I got to do what's right, even if those things don't happen. I got to sacrifice those things because doing what's right is the most important. All right. It's tough to be a follower. Tough to be a leader. It's tough to be a follower, too, especially if you have a bad leader. It's tough to be a leader, but it's the right thing to do. Lead your family, lead your home, lead whatever situation God gives you. Let's do it in a way that honors.